And there we go. This is Oliver from the Oliver Schirra Show, and I sit here with Per Christiansen. I had in my head Christensen, but yeah, Christensen is a more Danish standard name, I think. Christiansen as well. And the last interview I had was with Jack Raymond, and Jack Raymond works with Per on the LEGO Serious Play method for many years, but Per has even more history on the LEGO Serious Play method. So let's see what we can find out. Per is sitting in Mexico in a hotel while I'm sitting in Denmark closer to LEGO. and we might have some internet issues from the hotel network. So we try to keep it good. If it doesn't work out, we'll just do it again. So welcome, Per, to the Oliver Schirra Show on creativity.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy we could make it work.
Yeah, and Per was so nice to move it because my father came a few days early to visit me. Yeah, my father is typical. disturbing all my plans. And so let's find out, who is this Per Christiansen? How would you describe yourself with three words?
I guess that face expression clearly shows that I was prepared for that question. How would I describe myself with three words? I'm drawing a blank. So I have my Lego bricks here. I really don't know with three words, right?
It's, you know, like it can be like curious or playful, serious. And why these?
Well, then I would have to go with like you know, borrow from the Lego Serious Play name and say something about seriously playful or playing seriously.
playful, yeah.
But there is, there is something about play. I think that matters. I actually also think, I don't know what the word would be, but I am. What else? Help.
Danish.
Well, that's not going to help me even. It's going to be even harder, actually. I don't really work much in Danish. Here's the thing. I'm going to try to change your question. What would I like that other people said about me? Then I would actually like them to say that I was reassuring, predictable. And then I would like that say something about. I would like that they said something about integrity, and I would love for them to say something about play. So I have no clue if I are those things, but I would like people to say those things about me. Ooh. Is that a fair answer?
Yeah, and why would you want them to say that about you?
No, let's take the last part first, because I think there's a lot of magic in play, right? And I think that, you know, since I came into the sort of stage play world and then the Lego world, I've realized, you know, what play is, and that we all to use play more, and I don't only mean Lego Serious Play, but just the notion of playing out things mentally or physically. I know gamification is a big thing, but for me, this is not about gamification at all. It's this notion of playing out things, exploring and experimenting, and doing that and creating that safe space as adults. And I think seriously about that. It's a pity that for a long time, play was and this notion of what's it called, free play, was taking away from children. So it got more and more structured. And my kids, I mean, also suffer from that. So I wasn't a better parent in that way than anyone else. But I think that's something we're missing there as a species. And then the two other words was this. I had the notion of predictability. I'd actually really would like to be predictable. I don't think that's necessarily negative, because I think that it relies to integrity or relates to. So for me, in this case, predictable wouldn't be that I wasn't exploring, because I think that's the play part. I think predictable is that, in the sense that there that part of integrity that if how I behave or how I demonstrate my value or how I respond to someone transgressing my values would be predictable. So that if I'm on time, let me take a really simple and stupid example. I'm on time for a meeting. It's predictable that I'm on time on a meeting. If you don't do this, I get disappointed. Or if you keep violating our agreement, something else happens. So that notion of, in Danish, you would say, you know where you have me. I don't know if that translates into English, but I actually kind of like that.
It works in German, actually.
Yeah, and then we have probably the same roots in terms of language. So there's something that, but I'd like that predictability. I have partners, and now I'm in Mexico. I work with my business partner here more years than, I don't know how many, let's say 10 years, right? And I think it works because, you know, we both know that the other one would live up to, we don't have a contract. We know it's predictable that we do the things that we do. As we spoke about earlier, you and I, before we started recording, I landed and we went straight to one of my favorite restaurants because it's a stupid and simple example, but it's predictable that even though that I'm tired, I would want to eat good food because it's a way of restitution for me, right?
Yeah, so and it's also the predictability, how you explain it, for me sounds more like setting your boundaries. It's like...
I'm a huge fan of boundaries, right?
Yeah. So it sounded like when you have your boundaries and they're clear, so you're predictable, so people know and what to expect and where.
Yeah. And I know what to expect for myself as well. I mean, happiness is also sometimes a little bit about knowing what you can do and want to do so that you're not constantly unhappy with yourself.
Ah, yeah. So when you're not having clear boundaries, right? When you not have clear boundaries, you're always trying to figure out and not so happy. Not so much in flow.
No, totally. I mean, flow requires a set of boundaries because there are certain things you need to know what you're striving for, right? And you need to be able to focus on that. You know, that is some of the triggers for flow as well, right? And boundaries also really is important for play. I mean, boundaries is part of what's creating play because in play you have a certain set of rules or a certain language that keeps the play safe because it defines what is allowed in this play, what do we do and what don't we do. So that's also boundaries. So it's not about being a slave of boundaries. It's not the boundaries, because boundaries can do many things, right? But boundaries can also be keeping us down, but boundaries can also help us be free because we know that, you know, within these boundaries, I'm allowed to do these things. So there's no repercussions there. I'm not going to be da-da-da-da when I behave within these boundaries.
Yeah, I was just thinking about my son and the school and kindergarten. He's 8 now. But there you can see how the kids, you know, respect the boundaries in different ways and how it can be a problem. You're back.
I'm back. Sorry. I need to drink a little bit of water during our conversation because flying here just, you know, dehydrates me. But so I'm just drinking a bit of water.
No, it was just we froze for a moment, but that's what's happening. And then the third one was in, what was the third word you had?
I think that was integrity, right? So we sort of came into that with this whole boundary part.
Yeah.
But I mean, I understand integrity as this notion of, you know, I act the values that I espouse, right? That there is this sense of transparency. Yeah, that what I say is what I do, or if I say I stand for certain values, or I try to espouse certain values, I have those values.
Yeah, but that's beautiful. I have the feeling we are going into that with the Lego Serious Play method a bit. Some of these things.
Yeah, that's true.
Sound a bit part of the whole method. Because of the time, I'm jumping over one question, but one more to warm you up or to warm the guests, the listeners up about you. Do you have a secret or a fun fact not so many people know about?
No, I don't think so. Honestly, I don't think so.
I don't have your background to ask because Jack had all these weird figures in the background, you know, the four-headed duckling and
I have a relatively boring hotel room in and in Mexico City. No, I sort of sometimes feel that I'm running out of secrets. And I think you run out of secrets when you work. You know, this place is really a community. And I've been part of the community for 20 years. And people have, I've met all these people for 20 years. So it's like, your secrets are, you're running out of secrets. Or your secrets are so well hidden that you don't even quite know them yourself.
Yeah, the other thing is a fun fact. The other thing
what used to be a fun fact is that I'm a trained wine merchant.
In Denmark.
Trained wine merchant, yeah, and I work for wineries in Italy and Germany many years ago. That used to be a fun fact, and another fun fact is that allegedly my access into Lego Serious Play was via the wine. Robert Rasmussen, with whom I wrote the book and created the Association of Master Trainers, was the one that hired me, right? Because he was heading the project. And right from the beginning, he's always joked about that they didn't really need anyone on the team. And the team, it was a tiny, tiny team, right? But they actually needed someone that would help them choose wine in the restaurant. So that's so they hired me. I always so the wine seems to be my access into Serious Play as well.
Yeah, I mean that's of course down the road that would have been one of the questions. What brought you into Lego Serious Play, right? I mean, so what is your function? We got a bit from Jack, but now we want to have you to say. How did you get into, besides of being the wine taster and choosing the good wine for the meetings, so how did you get into
it? Yeah, I mean, the wine, I think the wine, I hope the wine was partly a joke, but these stories are always long stories, right? But so I have my wine, I have my business school background, I was a management consultant. And then I worked for Lego, the Lego company, and I was working with change management. I was working in the product management or product divisions, right? And I was working with change management there, and then what happened simultaneously was that my boss, a super powerful, gifted woman. She actually decided to leave the Lego company, and I read 3 lines about Lego Serious Play as a project, something that was happening inside Lego, and as Pam was leaving, I saw this and I was like, wow, this seems interesting, because what I could read about Lego Serious Play in those 5 lines was that it took this skill, my business school background, in terms of seeing organizations and the world as complex adaptive systems. It played on this notion of social constructionism, I felt. It played on strategy as emergent, as resource-based. All of these things that I had loved in business school, it had took those. And then it combined with this new world, for me, new world, that I had learned when I came into Lego. I've always been a bit interested in didactics, but you know, coming into Lego, it's really hard not to get curious about learning and development, and it's really hard not to go like, I wonder what this plaything does to children and eventually to the brain. So he kind of took those two things, and destiny would that I had a conference call with Robert, just him and me, so a meeting. A few days later, so I just asked him if they were missing a person on that and project team or whatever you want to call it, because it was sort of a not really a thing yet, but still a thing, and then it sort of grew from there. So serendipity and the universe calling and one leaving something on the internet. That I coincidentally had my first conference call with Robert about a completely different thing, because he was still part-time, so to speak, inside Lego as well, like I was. And it led to this conversation. And I think, I mean, other than the wine, I hope Robert could see a nice mix of bringing my consulting background into this thing, because Lego Serious Play was, at that time, you were an independent company owned by Kelt, the owner of Lego, right? Developing the method and also developing the business model. So how are we going to work with that? So all of this pretty fast led to that I moved into the startup company called Executive Discovery. And we, you know, finalized, you could say, the method, developed the training, created the first version of the training. I mean, there was a version. They tested one version, but then we finalized that and we started to create this network of partners, some of which are still there, which is one, I think, testimony to some of the predictability that we as a little entity also, you know, demonstrated, right?
Yeah, so how far was this Lego Serious Play? Was it a year, 2 years old, or was it really just like the first few months when you heard about it?
It's a really difficult question, because let's see, I would say that the idea when I joined in this timeline is always when did it start? So let's say the idea was probably about a year old. But someone might say, no, but you know that they had conversations with Kelt even earlier than that. But I would, as I recall it, and this I here I have to rely on what's left of my memory and the stories that Robert has told, because you have to think of this as an idea that almost came up in conversations between Kelt and probably not even really called Serious Play yet, and then they did something, and this guy was involved for a week, and then another guy, and the two core professors were there, of course, all the way through, and then, to be frank, it wasn't, they sort of, you know, they could hear the music, but they couldn't hear the orchestra, if that's a metaphor that works, and replicating it, it wasn't quite there. And this is where Robert played a gigantic role. And that's why I think one of the words that he's titled, whatever he uses for himself, is main architect, which is I think it's a great phrase for him. He came in and you know, figure out what the initial recipe should be for this. And then it started working. And that's around when I came in. And then we really took it and made it work, because also I'm ranting now, but hey, there you go. Initially we thought that Serious Play was one workshop. It was a strategy workshop that lasted 2 days. And why did we think it was that? Because that's what Lego initially wanted. So as always, remember, this was Serious Play is ultimately somewhere it's an idea and it's sort of, it's a client need, the client being Lego and the idea coming from the Lego owner for this workshop, the strategy workshop that could unleash the full potential of his managers and help them make better decisions in an unpredictable world. So that's what we thought, sure, if it was in the beginning. And if you go back to some of the first people we trained in September 2001, and the contract that they had to make with us, we had these partnership contracts. That was one way to do Serious Play, and that was that workshop. And it took us some time to realize, you know, that workshop was not Serious Play. No, sorry. That's not what I meant to say. I said it took us some time to realize that that Lego Serious Play was more than that workshop. So that workshop, Serious Play was not only that workshop. That took us a while. It's almost like we had to look at that, and then we had to, let's say, deduce what was the method. What is it that the method is inside this thing? still use this mic. So hopefully you have good sound. And you're just coming out of my computer now.
Okay, because I asked you a few questions and I thought like, okay, he's so in the story. But you didn't hear me.
What did you ask me?
Doesn't matter. You answered it while explaining. So, but the last question where you realized...
Maybe somehow I still heard you.
Serendipity.
You said in 2001, September was this first workshop. It sounds like a lot of work from...
First training.
Yeah, first training for the workshop.
Yeah, so we make this distinction. A workshop is when you use it with a client to develop a solution. And there have been a number of workshops inside Lego and pilots. So the first facilitators were trainers were in September 2001.
Yeah, okay. But then you realize this workshop is just a part and Lego Serious Play can be much more than that. So how long did that take? I mean, 2001, that's 21 years ago.
It took a long time.
So, from Jack, he explained that it was somehow, you know, this startup from Lego on the outside to kind of, as you explained, to help with the strategy and where Lego wants to go and, you know, redefine Lego to some degree. That's also what I heard somewhere. And then on one point, you and Robert took the whole thing and created the Association of Trainers.
That's even later.
So how long did it take for Lego to say, no, we want to focus on building bricks, not being a consultancy or, you know.
But Lego never wanted to be that. First of all, we were a separate company, right? We were executive discovery. We were not Lego. We were owned by Celt, the owner of Lego. We were controlled by Lego, by the Lego group in that sense, but we were not Lego.
Uh-huh.
And Lego never wanted, well, except for a very brief period, but it was never their intention to do that. That's why we were created to finalize the development and bring it out through a partner network. So Lego could bring... in the beginning, we actually literally bought the Lego bricks from the Lego company, kind of, and distributed them. Or they helped us, but it was like a service that we got them. And then we, being executive discovery, we developed a couple of other workshops that were also Lego Serious Play. But it's like Serious Play was still these workshops. We weren't really clear about the methodology. It was more like Serious Play could now be a team workshop, it could be a strategy workshop, and it could be more sort of a group coaching workshop. That's what we then had. And then right around the time Lego decided that the ED, executive discovery, should be merged into Lego, that's probably when it really dawned on us that there was some sort of method there. Maybe you could even say sometimes a small shock is required for a change in a system, right? So maybe that was it. So I think when we were then merged into Lego for a million different reasons, right? In 2002? No, that sounds too early. 2004. In 4, we were finally merged into Lego. And Rob to go down another path and actually start working with clients, and it's a bit of he was associated with a university or college in the US, and I joined into Lego as well. But we worked together still there. And that's when in 2004 was the first time we really developed a facilitator training where we managed to train people in the method. So that was probably around 2004.
Okay. Yeah, but it's still quite a long time. And I haven't really, I did, you know, business engineering,
production engineer, came to Denmark in 2005. And I haven't really heard about LEGO Serious Play until a few years ago.
That was actually on purpose, right? it was like all the way back to the early days, both with Kelt, the owner, and I remember clearly lots of conversations with Bart Victor, one of the two professors, that Serious Play should never become a fashion. Because if you come in fashion, you go out of fashion.
I mean, I'm just thinking about that time frame. We just had a glitch here. I was thinking of that time frame, 2005, 6, 7, IDEO with the ideation and the design thinking, Google design thinking, LEGO Serious Play. It's kind of like this. You know, around 2007, 8, 9, it's where creativity was becoming, and innovation was becoming more a part of business.
Yeah. But again, this is the thing. Serious Play was not innovation. Serious Play was strategy development. So one of the reasons we actually didn't want this to grow as an explosion was that people would associate the Lego bricks with a million other things than what this actually was. This is a problem-solving technique. People would throw it into innovation and creativity, not really knowing what these things mean.
Yeah, because it's Lego.
we didn't want to talk about it. We wanted clients to do it and clients to be happy with it, and then clients to tell it to their friends, so that we got clients through that way. Because because brightly colored plastic molded bricks, it's either play, which is a break from work, or it's some sort of creativity thing you do in the beginning of a meeting so people are in the right mood. And we didn't want it to be any of these things, but it's a really high context message. So instead of shouting it ourselves, we said, no, let's allow them to talk about it in the professional networks. So if you want to go far, you go slow, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not always working that way, but many times it works, you know, small baby steps, because you learn.
It's true, but again, I think if you look at it and what's been in and out of fashion the last 20 years, and if you look at the organizational challenges that Serious Play as an entity has been pushed with for lots of good reasons. I mean, Lego is going through a major crisis at this point, and they should have shut us down if they were logic, they were cutting so many things. I think it's because of this notion of just go slow, success from success. Don't shout it. You grow too fast, you're going to break.
Yeah, it makes sense. As I said, it's for some stuff, it works better that way, and for others, another way. Sure. But sometimes it's difficult when you're in the beginning, you know, which path to take. What is the best path for...
But I think this comes back to capital. Do you have patient capital or impatient capital? That's what Clayton Christensen knows. But Clayton Christensen always said that. The companies that succeed are not the companies that get their first strategy plan right. It's the companies that get their second strategy plan right. Second strategies, he didn't say plan. Right? He also said that everybody can grow. It's hard to get a profit.
Yeah.
Also, it's easy. If you have cash spare, you can just burn cash. You grow. Growth is not the hard part. Going profitably is really difficult.
Yeah, and that reminds me of an interview I heard on Tim Ferriss show with the Dane, what's his name? Ruby on Rails. He did something on Ruby on Rails, and he was also asked, why don't you expand? He's like, no, I have my 45 or 50 employees, and that's a perfect size for me. Yeah. I have my time, I have my development, we have the growth. If we go bigger, right, then all the other things come. So it depends what you want. But anyway, let's see. We have another about 25 minutes, 20,
25. Yeah.
I think we need two takes, but that's also okay. Mm-hmm. You have a lot to share. So what is LEGO Serious Play really? I mean, you talked about the method and what did you say? Problem-solving technique. So what is it now, really? I mean, you shared a lot about 2001.
I think you would say it is a problem-solving technique or solution-creating technique. We always say, is it a problem or is it an opportunity? But it's a technique to solve a problem or create a solution that unlocks the full potential of a group of people. And it does that by unlocking the full potential of each person. So it's of the individual and of the team. Sometimes we call it a communication technique because it helps people communicate. But it helps first the brain cells to communicate inside. See, I mean, here's the thing. First of all, it helps the brain cells communicate. So basically to think. yeah, but we laugh. But, you know, how often are you in a meeting and people answer before they think?
Yes.
If you go to a standard meeting, the more difficult the question is, the quicker people want to answer. So do they think before they answer? They answer what they already know. They don't think before they answer. And I'm being a little bit of black white, but you go fly on the wall into a meeting. The boss, whoever she is, poses a difficult question. Everybody wants to impact the final answer. You impact the final answer by being the first one to speak, because then you anchor and prime everyone else. So you've got to speak fast. The faster you speak, the less you thought before.
Yeah. Yeah, generally speaking, that's true.
I mean, I know it's general speaking, it's black and white, right? We need to answer in 2 minutes in this, right? But there is something there.
Yeah, of course, you can say intuition comes the first 3 seconds. The more you think, and then you're not listening to intuition, but it depends really on...
But intuition is just pattern recognition.
Okay.
You're not born in... But that's why someone can be extremely intuitive in one context and not in another context. So... Not to make this a gender conversation, but you know, it's often said that mothers are extremely intuitive with their children. And they are, because they have such a huge pattern recognition about their child. They can see the child is hungry before they're hungry. But then you bring that, they say mom or dad, just to say, right, into another context, not necessarily a child, but another context. Then they're absolutely not intuitive because they have no pattern to rely on.
Yeah, experience as well.
Experience as well, yeah. But okay. If you want to have a different solution, you need to break your habitual patterns of thinking. Otherwise, you're going to keep solving every problem with what you know. I mean, you know, we all suffer from that. So the questions you asked me in the beginning, the three words about me, I should ideally have built it with the Lego bricks I have here in front of me, right? Not because I would need to figure out what is it actually, and then that slowing down and that building and that engaging of my bricks and that sort of little conversation that's between me and what I'm building could probably help me give a more meaningful answer than what I ended up saying to you.
I think it was okay, but that's also why I throw these questions out. Some people are very fast and they know who they are, and others come to think. And yep. For me, it sometimes helps to formulate some further questions, if you know.
Yeah, it does. But I think lots of the people that, and again, it's a bit stereotyping. But when you answer that question quickly, I think it's because you thought about it before, so you have the answer ready. So you don't actually. So in the moment, you don't actually think. So because you have thought about this a year ago. But maybe you changed, right? Maybe you went through some sort of personal branding exercise 12 months ago, right? And there you identified the three elements about you. So now I have these three elements, which could be honesty, integrity, and love, right? Just to say something. Now when you ask me 12 months later, so Per, what are the three things that you would say about yourself? I would say these three things. Now they might have been true. Maybe this personal branding before in pre-COVID, they might have been true back then, but I've moved, but I haven't thought about the question since. So I still use the answer that I had back then. You see what I mean?
Yeah, and that's exactly what you say, communication.
Thinking about your question.
Yeah, it's like this answer. Yeah,
so I'm not actually thinking about your question because I already know the answer.
Yeah, so now how does Lego Serious Play help you to communicate with your brain? I mean, you show now, for the ones which only listen to the audio, you have been showing the little Lego bricks you have in your hands. You build something there. I have no idea what it is.
I have no idea either.
So how does this Lego Serious Play then work? If we can get into it in the 15, 20 minutes we have. I mean, you have the four core steps. You have the seven application technique. Jack also shared that you have the safe space you create in the beginning, right? And he has realized over time, if you don't really do that, something goes off.
So the safe space, and this is back to the boundaries we spoke about. What are the rules that we play by in this space? So the, creating that whole safety and so forth and so on. But let's park that for a second then. And so the four-step core process is posing the question. So that's the facilitator asking a carefully designed question with no obvious answer. Then it's construction. And then we'll come back to that again in a second. And then it's sharing. So each person is sharing what they've built. And then it's reflection, where they get questions to what they've built. So how does this help you think before you answer? Well, there's the pure element of, let's say, the time. So the construction phase, where you're building the answer, that takes, that could be a 7 minute or a 10 minute break.
Phase.
Box of time. Phase. Thank you. Where you are not talking, right? So you, so you're forced to think. So you're not being impacted by others. You can't, you don't just speak. You need to slow down and you need to think, right? So there's something about that attention that goes to answering this topic. And we know, and you know this from other exercises, whether it's when you, you go for a walk and think. It's just that notion of blocking off and allowing yourself to focus on the problem, right? Or the challenge. So there's that element there. Then there's the important element of the Lego brick. Because you could draw this or you could use posters for this, that would also help. But there's something about, there seems to be something, because everything can be falsified here, right? But there seems to be something about the tactile experience and the signals that, and the way that engage your brain that helps you think or build or whatever, construct in your brain as well. So we often say when you build in the external world, you build in your brain. So the whole tactile experience, there seems to be something about the 3D experience that engages the brain. Our brains are ultimately wired, evolved to handle 3D information. There seems to be something about, you know, these meta, the physical metaphors that you come across. Or, you know, our brains think in metaphors. It cannot not think in metaphors. So finding a flower might fire up a part of your brain. So you put the flower in, it means something. And then the modularity of the Lego brick really makes it easy for you to revisit your thoughts, right? I'm losing my bricks. So you're not stuck with your build and that you can keep changing it. But at the same time, there is an element of a boundary again.
Lost you when you said paper, when you use paper.
A blank sheet of paper or just some clay is almost like there's an infinite number and you don't really know where to start. There's no boundary in that sense. With the Lego brick, well, maybe you grab a plate, right? And so, oh, you feel you have a starting point. And there's something about green because, you know, at the core, we might feel that we are sustainable, right? But there are also, you know, something about the eyes, so you find a metaphor because in other moments, we can also be a little bit internally focused. So there is that paradox between the almost endless opportunities with the Lego bricks, but still the fact that, you know, there is a limit somewhere, and they encourage you to, and they have, and then you have these intuitive metaphors in some of the bricks. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I've seen a few videos also with Luca. He showed something with like having, when he talked with Stoyan, he had like 6 heads, and then he put like these rubber wires on top of them.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, this looks like a brain, or it could be a network.
Mm-mm.
For someone, and I was always wondering before I had the interview with Jack, how does that work when you see about Lego series play, you see some plates, and I found out you don't need a plate, you can just
no exactly But the thing is, you don't need a plate. But if someone, but the thing is, I totally agree, you don't need a plate. But for someone, in order to get started, they might say, I need a plate. So now they don't need the plate, but the plate in this case could help them. Another person might say, might find this piece here, right? This element here. The only thing I really know about us is that we are bridge builders. Okay, so they start from that. So that the physical material, there's no rule about what they need or don't need, but there is that intuitive, there's something that's go that in their brain goes like, we're definitely about this, so I know I can start here. Right?
Yeah, that then of course the other another question I have on my list, it was also kind of like, when you look at the brick set, what is the minimum requirement if you want to do an LSP method session? You know, do you have like just 3 or 4 different pieces, or do you, to actually be able to do something? Is there something you found out?
Yeah, I don't think it's hard to really speak of a specific minimum, right? Because it also depends on the length of your workshop and the nature of the question you want to be asking. I mean, I would say there is a duck exercise, which is also, you know, a Lego education, but if we kind of forget that one, because in some ways it's a limited exercise, but the little bag that I have in front of me now is called the exploration bag, or the window exploration kit. And it has about 35 pieces.
Okay.
That's nice for shorter workshops, because there is something about variety. I have a minifigure. I have some transparent bricks. I have a flag. I have a small plate that I showed you. I have a little flag, flower. So that gives me a fair amount. That gives me enough to work with.
Yeah, I was also thinking, you know, what if you only have 2x3s? These standard squares.
You can do it. I mean, I think many of us done workshops where there with limited amount of bricks, and it's doable. I mean, it gets sometimes a little bit harder because it can benefit a little bit to have these what we call instant metaphors. Something that looks like a flower often becomes a flower, which is the metaphor, where a 2x3 or a 2x4 sometimes, I mean, can be harder to say what would. You know, this could be sunshine, of course it could, right? But what it could also be the yellow jersey, maybe. But it's a little bit a less instant metaphor. It's a little bit harder to find the metaphor sometimes. So this is where the construction is and helps people think more than the metaphor, maybe.
Yeah. No, but that's good. So having a small bag of like 30, 40 different pieces, you can do already a lot of things.
You can do a lot, yeah.
Now you went into the 4 steps, and because of these 4 steps, you basically slow down, you start thinking, and also when you share, you have to think about what you did, right? And from Jack, I remember he said something, it's about having a facilitator around you, which asks the right questions.
Yeah.
That's also part of getting people to think more, or
yeah. It's really hard to do on yourself, right?
I don't know. I haven't tried yet.
Of course, it's possible. You can wonder about something, and people do it, right? But it is more difficult. But the external facilitator, that other person, it's like your coach, right? They can ask you those questions and keep you, you know, focused on that which is difficult, and maybe ask you the question that you didn't even know that you needed to answer in order to get the final answer. And if it is a group session, the facilitator can also maintain that safe space and the level playing field and that sort of thing. Yeah,
that's so now, yeah. Now I'm a bit wondering what I can ask in the last 5 minutes, because I think there's so much more to ask. What should we say for this part, and then we have to see how we do a second part. For who is this? I mean, now we just get the little taste of it, right? The 4 steps, slow down the thinking, actually go to think and not just answer from the pattern.
from your intuitive insight.
Mm-hmm.
But who is profiting doing Lego Serious Play, the method? What kind of persons? I've heard it can be one-on-one coaching, can be group coachings, one facilitator for 12 people normally. So if the groups are bigger, you have more mm-hmm. facilitators. Who is profiting? What kind of problems are we solving?
It's anything. That's the thing. Any problem with no obvious solution, or any opportunity with no obvious choice. No, but that's the thing. That's why this is a language. Who profits from speaking a language?
Okay, it's a language.
Anyone who needs to communicate profits from speaking a language. Okay. You can write a poem, you can write a novel, you can write a fiction book. Language is just a means, right?
Yeah, I was actually writing down today while I listened to Chuck's interview again. I'm like, can you create a movie with it, or music, or a book? And now it just came with different types of writing.
Yeah, but the thing with those, I mean, I'm not saying you could, because that sounds more like visualizing something that already is. This is a force, you know. So it's a little bit, it's more understanding entities. It's both, you know, it could be who you really are, or it could be the major value proposition. It could be understanding whatever. But it's so, yeah. Sorry.
Yes, but it is for single people which have some problems, so they can be facilitators, which are more coaches or therapists, and then you have the more consultancy, which work more with teams and corporations, right?
That's one way to put it.
But that,
the thing
that's
is, it's just a language. But here's the thing, Oliver. Yes, that the reason I'm not can't quite answer. It's just a language. It's just a language. Who needs to speak about? Who needs? It's a language that helps everybody engage their full brain power. Sometimes they need to find a shared solution, and then they use Serious Play for that. Sometimes they need to whatever diagnose the current situation, then they use it for that. So it's used for girls that has been trafficked. It's used for gigantic international companies who want to make sense of their business model. It's used by entrepreneurs starting up their company.
It's kind of like the more when I listen to you and also what Jack said, you kind of need to experience it.
There is also that. Yeah.
It's like he said when he experienced it the first time in the shop with you, he was like, wow. this wow effect for him was what draw him in, he said.
Yeah. And that one we do here as well. And that sometimes also where we use this sort of analogy, I guess, of downhill skiing.
Okay.
It was really hard to describe downhill skiing, but most people, when they try downhill skiing, they go like, wow, this was fun. What's fun about downhill skiing? I mean, I love it, but what is it that's fun about it? You know, it's the experience, right?
Full flow
experience as well, right? And it could be the nature, it could be the engagement of your body. Maybe you feel it's the social thing about skiing with someone else and having that shared experience. I'm not saying, I mean, but it's that you can't explain someone what it feels to do downhill skiing. You can't really explain how to do it. They have to go and do it, and then they experience it, and they start learning the techniques about leaning forward, even though that it feels counterintuitive. But you have to be on the skis to learn how to do it, to get the experience.
Yeah, there's many things you have to try before you can appreciate
or explain
it. I mean, but I haven't thought of downhill skiing, but yes, it's definitely a good one. Let's see if it stays in my subconscious for other conversations I have. So we have about 3-4 minutes. Where can people then experience Lego Serious Play? What can they do if they say, okay, what the fuck? I want to experience that. Do they go and call to Trivium and say, hey, I want to have a one-on-one coaching. I want to learn that. Or
no, that's a great idea. I actually didn't think of that one. Now I joked about it. But of course, that is an option, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be Trivium. I think, of course, me and Jack and other colleagues, but that's our what's the word I'm looking for here? Commercial activity, right? So that is, of course, that's a good way to do it, right? they will read about it. There's also, I mean, it's not the same thing, but sometimes it helps people a little bit to understand what are these guys talking about. Robert and I put out a book a few years back that could be meaningful, right?
What's the name again?
Building a Better Business with Lego, using the Lego Serious Play method. Building a Better Business. I also have posted a couple of articles on Medium, you know, the sort of blog platform or the Medium, yeah, where I talk a little bit about LSP or why we need more play, not less play, especially in these crazy periods with war in Europe and what have you. So those are two outlets. Serious Play that training. This is the Association of Master Trainers, where you know that under which you say we also deliver. We do sometimes offer these remote sessions. They can be found on seriousplay.training. So there is an option there as well. These are 4-hour sessions where you really learn about the method. That's another thing you can do. I mean, if you are a group of, let's say, 4 or 5 people, right? And you really want an in-depth experience of this. All these trainers that they can find on Serious Play Training, just to mention my fellow trainers, they would do that. Jack and I in Trivium, and Jens, who's also in Trivium, we also do that. So you can also come and call group and say, hey, Bear or Jack or Sean Shag or Robert, we want to have this full 4-hour remote session because we really want to understand that. That's a pass as well, right? But if you're a company, you might say, we're faced with this, maybe not the big solving of the strategy the first time you engage with the process, but maybe like, we have this team who are struggling with, I don't know what, right? Identifying their value proposition. Let's give it a shot. Let's do a half-day workshop and then reach out to, reach out to us, of course, but check if there are any local facilitators in your area, right? And again, they can always mail me and say, hey, Pierre, I'm in Barcelona, who should I work with, right?
So you're worldwide. The network is worldwide, or are you?
So yeah, I mean the facilitator. There are. That's correct. Trivium is international. Worldwide is sounds big, but we work pretty much everywhere. The Association of Master Trainers. We have trainers almost all over the world who train facilitators almost all over the world. So that, let's call it that Serious Play network is definitely global.
Okay, so you should be able to find someone.
Absolutely. And the balance here when you find someone is there's something about availability, of course, right? And that might be something of language because you might want to have this in your local language. Then there is also sometimes this balance of saying, should this person have a little bit of expertise in this area, right? People do use this for business model development, right? Or they use it in mentoring. They use it in talent development. And I said they use it with children who have certain special needs. So if you're in some of these spaces, you also need a facilitator who understands not only Serious Play, but also the context. It's that balance, and that's where we can also, if someone wants to reach out to us, right, me or Jack, we are always happy to point them in the right direction, because we might not be in Slovenia, and we might not know anything about it, setting up a whatever.
So if they have the question, like, we have this problem, we live in Malaysia and we speak mainly that language, then you would be able to point.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
And because you have another call actually now, so how can people find you? I mean, it's Per Christiansen and not Christiansen.
Christiansen, yeah.
And Trivium is one of the companies.
you work with. Is there any email, or I found you on LinkedIn and I reached out to you because of the newsletter, but I was told from Jack that's kind of an old newsletter I get. So.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
You don't know that.
I think that your newsletter is still up and running, but there's a couple of answers to your question. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn, of course, Jack Christensen. You can always reach out to me there. Follow me. That's an easy one there. Medium is an easy one also to follow and see what I'm doing. And Trivium, our website is trivium.international. So we chose that. So because of the fact that we work all over. And my email is there. It's typically difficult for people to understand the Danish name, but so it would be per.christensen@trivium.dk. So you can always find me there as well.
Super. Then I'll put the
Jack, link. Jack is there as well. And in general, you can say the association, which is this not-for-profit, non-commercial thing that we run as trainers, is on seriousplay.training. So that's also a good neutral point of contact, if you want.
Yeah. But with that, we say we'll communicate to have sure make sure that we have all the links correct.
Mm-hmm.
Notes. And I'll go through and correct a bit the glimpse we had through the network from the Mexican hotel or your headset, which didn't hear me.
All of those things, yeah.
And then we'll definitely take a second part and I'll clean up the questions to go a bit deeper because there's a lot. As I said, I probably 3, 4, 5 years ago, I started getting your newsletter. I'm like, wow, it's that old. And it's so many, so many.
And I think, and we are really happy with that. I mean, because it's now it's growing a lot, seriously. But now it has this platform of a lot of earlier successes to stand out. So yes, it's still being misunderstood. Yes, there are still people who think they're doing serious play when in reality they're just using Lego bricks. Because Lego bricks, and I want to say this phrase: Lego bricks doesn't make anything Lego serious play. It's just like having a brush in your hand doesn't mean you can do calligraphy, right? But now we have this 20 years, so there's this story about what it has done. So it's less important if someone somewhere, let's say in Berlin, does something that's not really serious play, because people will know that's not serious play because it's got this long history, right?
Yes. Yeah. As you said, in this case, the slow steps of success.
It's healthy.
Made it successful and stable. And thank you for explaining that. And I'm looking actually forward for another meeting. And I hope you're fresh enough because it's early in the morning.
But at least the sun is shining today here. It was raining when I came in last night.
Yeah, the thunder has stopped. I took out in some stuff. But let's see if it's going to rain. It's very typic, very heavy humid.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's making you tired. Thank you, Per, and I'll let you go for the next meeting.
Thanks. Thank you. Speak with you soon.
Bye bye.